Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley Today each weekday from 12:30 to 1 on the River 953, I also produce podcasts. And I'm excited to introduce you to a new podcast series in partnership with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative called We Are REC. Every week, we'll be releasing a new podcast where we interview different people from REC about a host of different topics. We'll get tips for saving money on your electric bill. We'll talk about renewable energy and the impact it can have in our communities. We'll even get some behind-the-scenes info about what happens when the power goes out in a storm. We're going to talk to linemen, energy advisors, board members, even the CEO. Don't miss out on information about community grants, scholarships, REC-hosted events, and more. Get every single episode as they're released on our website under the podcast tab at theriver953.com, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, anywhere you listen to a podcast. Just search for We Are REC. We are in the studio today with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And Lewis, I understand that you have five ways to save on my, is it on my electric bill? Is it five ways to save energy? What five things are you going to tell me about today?
Well, I think they go hand in hand, Janet. So if you're conserving energy or saving energy, then you're saving on your bill. So
it's funny how that all works out, isn't it?
Works out that way. So what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give you five ways, and I'll prioritize them kind of in an order where they have the most impact on your utility bill. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, like I said, between the live segments, between individual podcasts that we've done here talking about those, you know, individual components and where they kind of have value and things that you can do to improve. But just to kind of maybe summarize, if you will, and drive those things home a little bit more in a priority type fashion, I'll give you just five right off hand that would help with you with energy use. So
we're going to get into the weeds.
We're going to get into the weeds without getting over our head.
Which
that?
I will tell you, you shouldn't have weeds around your house because it's not very efficient.
That's true. So there's a ton of tips among tips, but you know, in the grand scheme, let's kind of just, you know, from a little bit more of a broader spectrum, stay somewhat higher level, and just we'll talk about five major areas of concern that will help you save energy. So the first one being, obviously, we talk about the envelope or the building shell. We talk about HVAC because residentially, in most cases, that's where the highest costs are. They're the most energy use. Like I said, just to kind of bring back some facts from our previous engagements on live shows, heating and cooling is an honest 48% of your annual energy use. So that's a really big number. So when you're looking at your individual bills, that is, it can be anywhere from 70 to 85% of your actual monthly bill, depending on the season and depending on habits that surround that and all the variables that are connected to how much energy you're going to use to heat or cool your home. The first thing I would have to say on the list is to get your home in order as much as within reason. So insulating and air sealing the house and getting that straight and that as much as possible would be the first thing in line. So if you have a newer home, you know, just that's just like maybe a mere DIY quick walkthrough to make sure nothing has changed, you know, insulation's still intact, everything is in good shape. But, you know, if you're lacking in those areas, that's going to save you a significant amount of energy. Just kind of a quick plug for that. There's a lot of resources out there from a private standpoint. Do weatherization. There's also a program out there for folks that more income-based, but there's a lot of services out there that are available for home weatherization and upgrades and repairs for people that are in need. So there's a lot of resources out there to kind of approach that first item. And, you know, it may be as complex as, you know, you having really to get really involved with insulation and air sealing because there's not much there in the original building shell, or just maybe a quick inspection and tidying up some things in that area. Second thing being your heating and cooling system. I mean, that is the single most expensive appliance or system that we'll replace in our home, maybe next to a roof or something like that, depending on the circumstances. So,
well, until you said roof, I was thinking it's the single most important thing in my house. But no, the roof might be a little more important than the heating and cooling.
But, you know, when it comes from a cost standpoint and upgrading and replacing and maintaining, the HVAC system is at the top of the list. And of course, it's at the top of the hierarchy of things that are going to cost you more energy to operate. So keeping the HVAC system in order from routine maintenance when needed, keeping those filters clean, making sure that the system is performing like it should. And even, to be honest, I mean, there's a lot of systems out here that are installed but aren't running at capacity or aren't running well because of underlying issues with the duct system in regards to design, in regards to airflow, balancing. There's so many things out there that a good qualified HVAC contractor can do for you, that is the single most area that you can improve on. So if you've got duct leakage, you know, we talked about duct leakage mm-hmm. in the past, how it can have negative influences on the house and negative influences on your power use because it's running more than it should or it's running harder than it should. Looking at duct sealing, looking at air balancing, looking at making sure that the system is delivering what it says on the nameplate that it's capable of doing, and is it meeting the needs of the home? So outside of the other things that we can control, which are where we set the thermostat, you mm-hmm. know, we say wintertime occupied setting at 68, what we recommend, and 78 for the summer or higher when the home is occupied. Now, that may be a little bit warm or cool for some people, but you just have to just bear in mind that there's an inherited cost for, you know, keeping the house warmer or cooler. You keep your house personally a lot cooler based on our conversation than what I even keep my home. So, you know, I'm a 68 degree comfort zone. And like I said, you know, you're keeping your house much cooler than that.
Well, so I'm not saying it doesn't go up to that. Nobody else is there and I don't have to tell anybody.
That's what we call thermostat wars.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
But,
yeah.
You know, where you set the control, controlling things like how well is the system performing, how well is the duct system performing overall, because that is the heartbeat of the system. I mean, any piece of equipment is going to run well on a properly designed duct system. A duct system that has kinks and bends and issues with air leakage or design or sizing can all have a negative impact on the system and how it operates. I've even spoke to some members that have had an equipment upgrade done and the duct work may or may not have been addressed to the degree that mm-hmm. it needed to be addressed, and they're actually using more energy now with a higher efficiency system because of the nature of the beast. Yep. And what's going on there with the mechanical system, it's just not responding well to the duct system that it was installed on. So all those things come into play. So making sure that you're engaged with a licensed, credentialed, performance-based type contractor is the wording that I would use there, that's going to go in there and look at the whole picture and make sure that the system is operating at its fullest potential.
Well, and I know a lot of those companies do offer a service where they will come out and they'll do an inspection for you, and they'll do kind of a walkthrough and say, hey, I've noticed this, or this is an issue. That is well worth the investment in having that done so that you can then make those changes to reap the benefits long term on your energy bills.
And in defense of the contractor, you know, some of those specials, they're a little bit less detailed. Sometimes mm-hmm. they're more detailed. It just depends on what's going on. So I think the key thing there is to communicate
yes.
with the contractor and what your concerns are with the system so that they can be addressed. Because, you know, obviously, you know, they're not living in your home. They can see what's going on at that moment in time. But if there's issues seasonally and they're there in the summertime, but you've got issues with airflow or something's going
yeah.
on, you know, communicate that with your contractor so they know what tools they need to pull out of their toolbox to repair the issue. So that way it just doesn't go unnoticed or unturned when they're diagnosing or performance testing your system. My motto has always been test and don't guess. So that's a good way to know that the system is doing what it should be doing. So HVAC definitely is high on the list there. Those are the two things. The building shell and the HVAC performance are very important.
They're the bulk of ways that you can save.
Exactly.
Okay.
Residentially speaking, they're very important. So making upgrades to the system when need be, upgrading to programmable thermostats, doing things to the system that will help enhance your energy use. Obviously, water heating and controlling water heating costs are expensive. One of the biggest users in what we call your base load, or everything that's not associated with heating and cooling, is water heating. And the reason being is that the water heater has to start and stop throughout the day over the course of a 24-hour period.
Because it's maintaining, so it's ready to go when I turn it on and need it.
So in our mind, we think that because we're not opening the tap and we're not using hot water, the system isn't doing anything. Well, in fact, it is. Those, you know, and it all comes down to, just like the physics we talked about earlier regarding the temperature difference between the water in the tank mm-hmm. and where the water heater is located. So if it's inside the envelope or inside the house, it's not so much of a big deal. It's surrounded by a pretty, you know, most people keep their homes between 65 and 75 degrees depending on the season. So looking at that, those aren't really extreme temperature differences, but the water heater's still kicking on and off throughout the day. And if you know what you're looking for, you can actually see that in your hourly power use when the heating system or cooling system isn't in play. So if you take that, the standby loss, this is what we call standby loss, those things right there with water heating are a very, very costly factor, which is why water heating is such a big component of your base load power use. So outside of that, things that we can control, you know, putting a water heater blanket on there, insulating lines, insulating water lines that are located in unconditioned spaces, or at least insulating the first 6 feet of it, you know, leaving the water heater if possible. So if the water heater is located in a crawl space or exposed to much colder temperatures, garages, things like that, you see a lot of that. We would recommend a water heater blanket and insulating those at least the first 6 or 8 feet of that water line, hot and cold, where it enters the crawl space or so on and so forth. And if you can insulate the balance of the lines, that's
even
a good
better.
Thing too.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not very feasible. So do as much as you can there in that arena. And of course, set the water heater at 120 degrees. That's the recommended hot water setting.
Well, and the other thing that goes along with that, just like it does any of the other equipment when you're talking HVAC, is making sure you're doing the proper service on it, because if you're not flushing it, then sediment's going to build up, so it's going to work even harder to try and keep all of that.
It can over time, and it's all going to kind of hinge on your water quality and what's going on. You know, people that have deep wells and located in certain areas of the state, we're serving 22 counties, so there's a massive amount of
different soil conditions,
We go from sandy soil to rock
city water.
And city water. So you've got so many variables there. It's all going to come down to water quality and how much electrolysis you have over time, but and sediment buildup. But you know, looking at that, you know, the other part of that is water usage. So, you know, if you have a dishwasher, a mechanical dishwasher, and you don't like to use it as much because you like to hand wash, you typically will use more hot water, and it'll cost you more to hand wash your dishes than it will to run the dishwasher. If you run the dishwasher on the proper cycle with no heat dry at the end and things like that, you're going to be a little – it uses less water. So you're conserving water, and you're conserving some hot water use in that respect too. And then, of course, you know, washing clothes in cold water is going to be less expensive than warm or hot water in conjunction with your bath and shower time. So if you've got teenagers or kids in the house that like to take that 45-minute shower.
Or multiple ones. I mean, that's the other thing, because you can have one kid, but if you have three kids
or
three four
kids taking
then
45-minute showers and, you know, every day of the week, or I mean, 45 minutes may sound a bit extreme, but, you know, really, I mean, the average shower, people are taking between 15 and 20 minutes in the shower. You can actually reduce your hot water use and reduce your bill quite a bit. I mean, if you reduce three people taking a 45-minute shower, roughly, you can save, and you cut that time down to 10 or 15 minutes, even at that part, you're looking at about a $300+ savings a year just by reducing those three showers. So that's, you know, that it adds up over a period of time. So managing your hot water use, in conclusion, would be a good thing there too. So, and then it's going to come more down to, you know, how does your lifestyle shake out? Do you have a pool in the summertime that you run? You know, I would recommend a timer for a pool pump or a spa. If you have a hot tub there, you know, they can be pretty costly to operate, especially in the wintertime months. So when we talk about those extra items, you know, not everybody has a pool. Not everybody has a jacuzzi or hot tub. But those that do would benefit from shutting down the hot tub in the portions of the year if you're not using it.
You know you're not going to use it.
There's no need to keep it online, because it's a pretty costly item. It can be anywhere between $50, $60 to $100+ a month, depending on the season. So it's a pretty high dollar seasonal base load item. And for some people, year round. Pool pumps, same token. You know, we recommend putting a timer on the pump and trying to limit that pump run time to 6 to 8 minutes if possible. You know, and then it's going to come down to other appliances in the house as well. So how many fridge freezers, you know, do you operate? Are those fridge freezers located in places where they're going to use more energy, like a unheated or uncooled garage or outside even, or in a shed or things like that? Those appliances are not designed to be run in unconditioned spaces, and they will use more energy. And to put a percentage on it would be a whole lot of guessing, but realistically, they will. I've seen them fail in cold weather, and I've seen them fail in hot weather just the same. So they're better off if you can get it at least in a basement area, but it's always convenient. You know, you go to the house, it's, you know, typical home, garage is attached, you know, that's the best place to put an extra refrigerator, because it's usually right off the kitchen or a common area to get to it easily. So I get it. Mm-hmm. I really do. But bear in mind, it will use a little bit more energy out in the garage area than it will inside the living space. Looking at other appliances, you know, seasonally, dehumidifiers, space heaters, all those things that are going to use more energy. Space heaters, we talked about 1,500 watts apiece, so that's a big energy user. So if you must use a space heater, use it judiciously. Use it only when you need to. Isolate your activities to that one room and then turn it off and unplug it. So use them wisely. Dehumidifiers, a lot of people run dehumidifiers, especially with all the rain we've had over the last year or so. People that have basements and spaces where they're getting some moisture from the outside. I mean, it's pretty common in Virginia, but you know, remember you're trying to beat Mother Nature. So if you don't handle the source is taking care of your runoff water, making sure that you don't have any issues with the foundation or anything that you can mitigate before that moisture gets into that space is going to be much more preferable.
Yeah, it's going to be cheaper than having
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a dehumidifier can use anywhere between 500 and 1500 watts, just depending the age and the size. So
really, because we have one attached, we have a newer furnace, but it has.
That's a humidifier.
Okay, is that what that is? Because it looks like it has. It was from the 1940s. I mean, I've never turned it on. It works.
Probably an old.
But I have no idea what it was or why it was there. So I've never touched it.
Evaporative type humidifier, probably. I'm referring to more like a dehumidifier that you would either dump a bucket on every day.
Oh, okay. That you would sit. They were standalone little things that you plug in. Okay.
Yeah, those use a lot of energy for their size, and sometimes you know we get some calls regarding those, and they just and all of a sudden as soon as you start having the conversation, they go, oh yeah, I started a dehumidifier.
Well, and that's
what mode are you running in? Well, I think we're running it in continuous. And it's like, okay, well that's using about 750 watts, you know, 24/7. I mean, it's adding an honest 47 bucks to your bill every month or more, just depending on how much it's running. So, and how much energy it uses when it runs. So managing those other appliances and how you run them seasonally will be, and mitigating the issues that surround that or investigating them at least before you have to rely on those devices. And if you must use a dehumidifier, set it in a reasonable percentage range. Adjust it to 50 to 55% at best if you can, and see if you can manage the humidity a little bit more in the summertime. Looking at those appliances, looking at how you're using them. I mean, cooking, and we find ourselves, you know, some families cook a lot, some families don't cook very much, some go out a lot, some, you know, it's just some cook other ways with crock pots and pressure cookers and air fryers. So there's a lot of great innovations out there
that actually
cost you less to use the oven over and over again, or the range top. But cooking is typically it's hard to have a conversation about it because it's more of a lifestyle thing. You know, around the holidays, we typically know we're going to cook some more, have guests and family over, so our occupant activities are going to increase. But and obviously the last thing on the list is looking at your lifestyle, you know, looking at what you're doing on a daily basis. Is there areas that you can improve on, whether it be in the realm of vampire loads, electronics, whether it could be how many loads of clothes do you wash, and what are you doing every day to help drive your occupant behavior portion or your lifestyle. Look at those things as well.
So I have a question for you, because you just, when you were talking about appliances and lifestyle and vampire loads, we were talking earlier about how many fridge freezers that I have in my house.
I promise I won't disclose that
information. I didn't say that I have two stoves.
Okay.
I have one in the basement along with the fridge freezer.
But remember, if you're not using it.
But it's plugged in.
Yeah, it's okay, though. It's
so
not
it's
using
not
going to
have.
Unless it has a clock on it, but we're talking, if it's a digital clock on the stove, we're talking, you know, maybe a tenth of a watt.
Yeah.
A tenth of one watt. So,
and
I mean,
it only gets used literally at Thanksgiving and Christmas when it comes handy to have someplace else to put the turkey so I can make all the other things in the
oven. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because members will ask that question. Well, I unplugged my dryer and I unplugged my washer and I upgraded all those appliances to Energy Star. Well, that's a great thing that they are Energy Star, because they're going to use less energy when they're operating. But typically appliances in that realm don't have any kind of significant power use when they're not being used, like the oven and the range. Unless you turn a burner on the range or you turn the oven on, it's not using any power, with the exception of the digital clock on the display. So you, those appliances aren't nearly as detrimental to you as the things running in the background constantly, like refrigerator freezers, dehumidifiers, space heaters, other items that would be cycling on off, water heater, things like that. So looking at it in that realm, the small stuff adds up, but you got to just kind of take a step back. Lifestyle is a hard thing to have a conversation about, because, you know, we don't, you know, we know our members and we like to know our members, but we don't divulge into their daily lives to the degree that we can tell exactly what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. We can look at power increases and decreases, and we can speculate what was going on at that particular time, and we can definitely see how weather's impacting the usage, which would correlate to the heating and cooling system. But looking at lifestyle, that's a personal choice and something that you have to kind of dig down and evaluate a little bit more. But it is, like I said, for some families, their lifestyle – adjustments can definitely help save some energy.
Well, and I think that's what comes in handy too. We've talked about the energy audits that you can come and do, because sometimes I may look at what I think is my lifestyle and not think about something and how it might impact. We were looking on my usage app and I couldn't figure out why my Sundays were spiking and what was I doing on Sundays. I don't do anything on Sundays. And you're like, really? When do you do laundry? I'm like, I do laundry on Sundays.
Exactly.
So, those are the kinds of things that I may not think of that you just simply suggesting may, oh, okay, now it makes sense.
Right. And that's the home run with Smart Hub. It helps you manage your power use. It helps you identify, because you're living there, so you know roughly what you were doing. So once you can separate what's weather related, mm-hmm. or related to the HVAC system, and what's related to what's going on in the house regarding
otherwise
appliances,
yeah,
that are running in the background and things, and then what you're doing is with occupant behavior, you can kind of really pin down what's going on. You can also pinpoint if something goes awry, if a well pump fails or something starts to run on that shouldn't run on and power use gets out of control. You can typically catch it long before you're getting your next bill. So that's why we encourage Smart Hub so much, to that degree that it's invaluable to finding an issue,
well, yeah,
before you get a phone call saying that your usage has gone way up this month and you know, hit a special report that we do, or you're catching it long before you're getting that bill potentially. So
we've talked in other podcast episodes about how much awesome information is on the website. So are these kinds of ways to save and options and ideas and suggestions on the MyREC website?
There are a few things out there in generality, but we have what's called Ask the Experts hyperlink, which will send Rich and myself an email. So if you have a question along those lines and you don't necessarily want a phone consult, you can do that through Smart Hub, or you can do that through the website through Ask Energy Expert. You can submit a question and we'll respond to you and give you all the information that you may need. And we can continue that conversation. And a lot of times, sometimes they manifest into an
in-home audit,
exactly,
or an actual phone conversation,
exactly,
or something along,
right,
those lines.
You know, so we can communicate with you under any channel that you that's more convenient for the member. So whether it be email, electronically, because you know you're thinking about this stuff while you're on lunch break and you don't have time to talk, but you got time to maybe scoot an email out and look at and ask a few questions. We'll be glad to accommodate you any way we can.
Well, thank you. These were five good ways. You
All right.
You have my seal stamp of approval.
Okay.
I know you'll sleep easier tonight knowing that.
I do.
We have been.
And
chatting.
I promise I won't tell anybody how many refrigerator freezers.
Yeah, well, it's not that many. You know, after all, it's, well, you know. Okay, we're not talking about that.
That's right.
We have been chatting with Lewis O'Berry. He is an energy management advisor for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. Head over to myrec.coop for more information on their website. Lewis, thanks for coming to hang out with me.
Thanks for having me again, Jamie.